Good afternoon, everybody. Pleased to be here to talk about our case study of three farmers who used grazing and no-tillage integration. I got really interested in the potential to improve soil health by integrating grazing and no-till cropping systems. Some of the benefits are, especially for the cover crops. Cover crops are becoming very popular in Pennsylvania, but and that is mostly because those cover crops are often used for forage, but they could also be used to graze animals. Then the farmer gets more value out of the cover crop, and that leads to more attention being paid to the management of the cover crop, seeding rates, planting dates. They tend to let them grow longer, so although they take off some biomass, they still leave a lot, and typically they leave more than if they would just kill that cover crop when it is very small. Another benefit of grazing is that you have the manure and the urine that you are spreading in the field. And also the trampling of the organic matter into the soil by the hoofs of the animal, as well as perhaps a beneficial impact of saliva. That's a bit potential yet and hypothetical. If that grazing is done with intensive rotational practices with high stocking densities and then short grazing duration of the grazing and a long rest period, where we leave about typically our farmers leave about 50% of the above ground biomass, they leave that behind, as you will see in my data. Then that could really help to improve soil organic matter content, also the crop yields. For example, in some different studies that I found, rotational grazing yields increased 9 to 68% compared to continuous grazing. And then if we compare, I told you a lot of our cover crops are harvested for forage, but if we compare the cost of grazing to that of harvesting, storing, feeding forage, then the cost of grazing are less than half of that stored forage. So I wanted to learn about how farmers are doing this, and I have three case study farmers in different parts of Pennsylvania. Here they are, two are beef producers and one is a dairy farmer. So this is the more northern location, Russ Wilson. This is the coldest spot in Pennsylvania, I always say, roughly, coldest place. There's a lot of climate variation when you go from the north to the south. He has been farming there since 2009. He has a 220-acre farm with 130 acres in cropland and pasture. The rest is forest. His county is called Forest County for a reason. He uses 100% no-till practices and has 70 Angus beef cows. He also has goats and sheep and a lot of different animals. He is a tremendous innovative farmer, I have to say. It has been just a privilege to work with him. He has more than 70 planted species on his farm, and we count, he listed all of them for me: perennials, warm season, cool season, annual cool season, or annual warm season, and he is doing a lot of experimentation on himself, on his own. And by doing his innovative practices, he has been really able to extend the grazing season. So in this climate, we have something like 6 months of winter, or fall and winter, and he has been able to graze for almost 300 days in a year. So he uses different practices to achieve that. He moves his cattle something like 4 to 6 times a day. So he uses very highly intensive rotational grazing. And then he lets his pasture rest for 40 to 60 days. And here you see how he achieves his grazing for 300 days in a year. He grazes through the snow. He has here orchard grass and tall fescue, and the animals, they don't seem to mind it. The second farmer is the Brubakers, and that is a multi-generational farm. They have different activities, and they also have broilers, they have a store, they grow grain, and have a 400-acre farm which is blocked off, and they have some that is fenced off, and they do graze. 90 Limousin Angus breed cows. They have also been 100% no tillage, and they use cover crops since 2013, and use those also to graze them. So they have a lot of more things on their hands, and they don't move their animals as frequently, about one time a day. And then the third farmer, now the first two were beef farmers, and I have learned that grazing beef is quite different from grazing dairy cows, and that is here on the third farm is the dairy farmer in the southeastern part, and this is like the warmest part of Pennsylvania, a lot longer growing season. This farmer, he has a dairy, and he also has a seed business as well as livestock nutrition business. He's a Mennonite farmer, milks 30 cows, is also 100% no tillage. He uses cover crops on all his fallow ground, and he moves his animals once a day. He actually combines grazing with on-stall feeding. He feeds his animals during the day on the in the barn, and he grazes his cows at night. Especially during the summer, because he because of the heat. His farm is only 45 acres, and he grazes 10 acres off his farm. The other acres he harvests, mostly for silage or high moisture corn. But he has 7 acres blocked off as perennials, orchard grass, alfalfa perennial, ryegrass, also some meadow fescue and some clovers. And then 3 acres he rotates through those 10 paddocks of annuals, cool season annuals and summer warm season annuals. So the challenge we have in Pennsylvania with grazing is the two periods. One is in the winter and one is in the summer, where with our cool season perennials, which are the mainstay of our grazing. So we have a decline in the summer, and these annuals can help us meet those challenges. So I want to go through here how they can help. So here we have a cool season annual planted in the fall, can be grazed one here. This one is one time grazing. This grazing can happen a little bit before or after the peak in cool season perennial production. So it helps us to meet grazing needs here when we have a shortage and here. Gone wrong way. Let me see. Which way? Okay, here. Now, these cool season annuals can also be grazed several times, like you see here. And we'll see some examples of that too. So here, we collected data on these farms. Here is a rye vetch cool season annual and rye vetch clover. This is in the in Tionesta, which is in a northwestern location, and we measured that they he grazed in this. This was in July, so this would help him to alleviate the summer slump, and he grazed 897 pounds or kilograms of dry matter per hectare, which was a 20% grazing. So these farmers also pay a lot of attention to what they leave behind. I always say it is to improve the soil, to feed the livestock in the soil, and as a solar panel for regrowth again. And here is it in June, and he grazed 40%, so he had a 2,600. And this is how that looked. It was like a forest. The cows, they were almost buried in that hairy vetch. So that was a one-time grazing event. Here we have some examples of multiple times of grazing from a rye clover vetch grazed 2 times. This is in the northern location, and this is on the dairy farm. So this farmer, he grazed 54% and 31%, 1500 kilograms, about 700 kilograms of dry matter, and you can see the numbers there. So the total spring grazing from 3 times of or 2 or 3 times of grazing were 2,200 to 3,900 kilograms, and you can see they are very consistent in leaving residue there. Now, warm season annuals can also be used. For example, they can be grazed two times. And we see that some examples here. This is on the beef farm. He used Japanese millet. That's an interesting millet that not is very not known to a lot of people. A warm season annual and very well adapted to poorly drained soils. So pearl millet was used on the central location, and then Sudan grass grazed three times. And this grazing on the dairy farm is quite different from the grazing on the beef farms, where they can graze more mature forages. Here, this farmer is very concerned about the quality of that forage, so he grazes it definitely more vegetative. But the yields from three times of or two or three times of grazing were up to 6,000 kilograms of dry matter. Here are some examples. This is pearl millet, and here we have it after grazing. You can see how much is left. This is Japanese millet, and here we have rape and the pearl millet. A bit difficult to see, but it is in there. This is sorghum Sudan grass, and this is what that looks like then after grazing. And then finally, I wanted to show you how also we can graze a warm season annual mix one time at the end of the summer. Here we have some example, corn, cucurbit, sunflower mix, corn, Japanese millet, buckwheat, sunflower mix, or sorghum Sudan grass, rape mix. 7,500 kilograms, 5,100 and 4,100 kilograms on this one. Here, this one, you notice 90% was grazed. That was a bit of an aberration. The farmer, it got away from him a little bit, his animals, due to some circumstances. But here, I wanted to show you how that works then. This is Ross Wilson in the northern part of Pennsylvania, and he is grazing corn there, and he's moving his animals. This is how that looks after grazing, and he moves his animals something four times a day, four to six times. They are interesting to see also how they graze. Graze like a train, shoulder to shoulder, and they're going in there. But first they have to explore the field. They have to first run to the other end, and then they go and graze all that. Wow, how am I doing with time? Almost done. Still good? So if we combine all this, so we have these no-till established annuals. How can they help? You have seen, this is just a summary, the types of biomass that we can get from grazing. I just added them up for the different scenarios, so you can plant these winter annuals and then you can plant the summer annuals, and these are the types of yields that we have been measuring, the grazed yields, and then they still leave usually 50%. Again, I'm going the wrong way. So I'm not having a lot of time to talk about soil health, but we have also evaluated that, and we see that by using these practices, these farmers can really help improve their soils. So in conclusion, no-till winter and summer annuals can be combined with cool and warm season perennials to alleviate the summer slump and meet winter grazing needs for these farmers. We also noticed that they can really reduce their inputs this way and improve the soil. So this can help grass-fed beef and milk production in the United States. Do I have any question time or?
No. I don't think so.
All right. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.